We continue this morning the Ten Commandments, and specifically the Second Commandment, which is found in the 20th chapter of the book of Exodus. Exodus chapter 20, at the fourth verse. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me, and keep my commandments. Some of the commandments are very short. This one is a lengthy commandment, encompassing three lengthy verses. I don't know that we can judge relative importance of these commandments in terms of the space given to them. But also a good bit of space is given to the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. We're going to look at all of these commandments because it's in our nature to miss all that's there, or much of what's there. If we were to ask the two prominent, most prominent sins of the church today, the modern evangelical church, it would be flagrant violations of the second commandment and the fourth. Just this week, clerical help, a person I work with every day, a lovely person, married and two children, I think one 11 and a daughter who's, I guess the two daughters, one is 13 and the other is a senior in high school, be graduating in May. And they're church-going people. They go to a nice Baptist church, not one of these liberal churches, she said, but they have the gospel, a conservative church, a small church. She has prayers up in her work area, in her cubicle. But she told me that her daughter, who lives at home, works. Goes to church in the morning, and then goes to work. Works from 1 until the early evening. What is the matter with Christians? We are as disobedient to God's word as ever the Jews were before they were destroyed. And yet we think ourselves better and more advanced. There are many things that we're going to say about the fourth commandment. But this is right on the surface. Just like there are many things that we could say about the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery, but right on the surface, it means you don't go to bed with someone that's not your husband or wife. And the fourth commandment, in it, thou shalt not do any work, but God's people go to work. Why is that? And they let their children, neither thou nor thy son nor thy daughter, the visitor in your house, the manservant, the maidservant, the stranger, the guest who comes in, you are responsible to make sure that all on your property keep this day holy. Do Christians do that? Absolutely not. And yet we say we love the Lord. Now I know that sounds harsh. we are a disobedient people, and it's time that we humbled ourselves and knew that we are a sinful and disobedient people. But we're here to talk about the second commandment. You could go into many congregations this morning where there are great sounds of music and all kinds of solos and all kinds of things to make people feel good, and they all think they keep this commandment. They think this commandment means if you brought a statue of the Virgin Mary into church and you kneeled down and burned a candle and prayed to that statue, then you violate the second commandment. That's all they think. Oh, the Catholics, they are. Yep. Those Catholics, I'm glad we aren't Catholic, because they worship images. This is so like us. But I want to tell you something. In the days of the Reformation, when idolatry was very bad in the Catholic Church, there was a man named John Calvin who had to flee for his life from France, and he went to Geneva, and he taught and he preached. And God had given him great gifts, and he was a man of great courage that would not compromise the truth for anyone, and who was no stranger to suffering. And God taught him the wonderful meaning of this commandment, which has been embraced by many men that have walked in this tradition. It's found a place in our Confession of Faith and Catechism. I'm going to read for that in a minute, but the principles that were enunciated by Calvin in the days of the Reformation with regard to the worship of God, when the Parliament in 1643, I believe it was, summoned a great assembly of 122 divines, the most learned theologians in all of Britain, to draw standards for the whole British Church, for England, Scotland, and Ireland. They met there for 6 years. And they embodied these principles in our Confession of Faith and Catechism that we'll be talking about this morning. What is required of the second commandment? Well, we saw the essence of this commandment last week is that God is a spirit. He doesn't have a body. He has no sensory perception, no ears, no eyes. Now, I know the Scripture speaks about the eyes of God are in every place beholding the good and evil. But children, does that mean that God has eyes like you have and that He's up in the sky and looks down upon heaven? I didn't know that. When I was a little boy in church, I used to think that God was a man. I used to picture Him as a man, God forbid, in a brown suit that was up in the sky. So I've learned ministers can't take anything for granted. If you think of God like that, that is a terrible offense. He is a spirit. He is invisible. And no one knows the substance that God has. No one. It is known only to Himself. He is utterly transcendent in that sense. He is that than which nothing greater can be conceived. And not only that, but He is greater than anything that we can conceive. And He has no likeness to anything that we could ever think of. Because all that we can really think much about are created things that have to do with our senses. What are our senses? Sight, touch, hearing. There are five of them. Taste and smell. God has nothing to do with any of those. You can't see something that's invisible, can you? You can only see something created. And there's a problem. Because God is not like anything created. He's not like anything that He's made. And human nature is to think of God in terms of things that we can relate to. Isn't that right? Synthesizers, keyboards, soloists, pageantry, all those things that we can relate to. And they make us think of God, don't they? So that's where we fill up our churches with these things. And you know what? We begin to think of God in terms of these things that are brought into God's worship. And that's where the sin comes in. I'm going to come back to this theme in just a moment. But God is a spirit, and He is to be worshipped in a way that corresponds to His nature. That is the essence of this commandment. So God forbids the likeness of any creature, that we don't make any likeness of Him, because He is without likeness to any creature. He can't be compared to anything that He has made. So that we talked about last week, and I hope we all understand this, that the essence of this commandment is that God's worship must be spiritual. It's not to be a carnal worship. It's not to be a worship that preeminently set upon things that are material, but it is to be a worship that corresponds with His nature. God is the Spirit, Jesus says, and they that worship Him in spirit and in truth. The hour is now. And He said this in contrast to the temple worship, which was very figurative and symbolic, with incense and choirs and sacrifices and altars and carvings and all of these things. And Jesus says, the hour is now when you will no longer worship in Jerusalem, but will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, because God is a spirit. And the Father seeketh such to worship Him. No longer does He seek, and never has sought, a worship in anything created or perceptible to our senses. Now there are two prohibitions contained in this commandment, and those are the ones that we're going to talk about this morning. There are two prohibitions. And the first one is explicit. And explicit means a prohibition that is very plainly on the face of the text. And the other prohibition is implicit, which means it is not plainly and directly there, but it is a good and necessary consequence. It is an implied prohibition. What are they? The first prohibition in this commandment, remember, God's worship is spiritual. God requires a worship that corresponds to His nature. And consistent with that principle, the first prohibition is that we may not make any representation of God whatsoever. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, literally any carved or cast image. That's what a graven image is. A carved or cast image. Something to represent Him. The heathen made their statues to represent God. the Israelites fell into this trap. They made a golden calf. Now, they didn't believe that that calf was God when they worshipped it. They knew better than that, but it was a likeness that they could relate to. And you say, well, that's strange that that image would be a calf. I wouldn't have a calf. I might have a sunflower, or I might have a painting of the stars or something, but a calf. Well, you see, the Israelites had been in Egypt where there was great religious significance attached to a calf. And they really related to that. For 430 years. And so it was a way of putting them in touch with God. Just like the Roman Catholic goes into the darkened cathedral and there's a little alcove there and a statue of one of the saints and all these candles, maybe 100 candles there and a kneeling bench. And that scene puts them in touch with God. Put them in a room like this, they couldn't find God. But put them in that kind of an atmosphere, it puts them in touch with God. Just like so many Christians walk into an evangelical church and they hear the organ playing and they hear the soloist and they hear the piano and the organ going together, and it puts them in touch. That was the golden calf. Exactly what it was. It was a likeness to God. It is tying God to something created in our mind. And that's forbidden by this commandment. Notice it says, thou shalt not make a carved or cast image. Carved would be to carve it like a sculptor. The other thing would be to make a mold and pour liquid metal into it so that out comes a statue. But not only these things, but any other likeness, any form or shape, carved or not. Do not link me, says God, any likeness of any creature whatever. In Deuteronomy, the 4th chapter, verse 15, the Lord warned his people before they came into the land. Now this was 40 years after they had been delivered from Egypt. And God says in Deuteronomy 4:15, Take ye therefore good heed unto yourself, for ye saw no manner of similitude on the day that the Lord spake unto you in Horeb out of the midst of the fire. God reminds them, remember at Horeb that you saw no likeness. That's what similitude means. You saw no form or shape or representation of me whatever. When I spoke unto you from the top of the mountain that burned with fire, you saw no similitude. See, beloved, the tremendous reach of this commandment. Can you see that? That God will not allow us to be represented. God will not allow us to represent him by anything perceptible to our senses. God will not be represented by anything perceptible to your five senses. Eyes, ears, touch, taste, and smell, like incense. Don't you think that's a tremendous reach? Why, if you think of all the medieval worship in the great cathedrals of France, have you seen pictures of them? All those magnificent cathedrals and all the ceremonies, and even today, some of you look at the Mass in St. Peter's Cathedral or Masses in other large churches, you see a lot of pageantry and you smell the incense. There's a certain smell in those places that you have. And then you think the worship of our founding fathers up there in New England in the 17th century. It's like night and day, isn't it? Why were they so different? It's because of this commandment and this principle. God will not be represented by anything perceptible to our senses because He is a spirit. And He will have us think rightly of Him. And when we begin to introduce likenesses, we begin to think of God in terms of those things, inevitably, so that God's glory is degraded. Now, this is not simple to understand, what I'm telling you this morning, but it is so important and far-reaching. And it is why we worship the way we do in this congregation. Even mental images of God are forbidden by this commandment. That are mental images, I should say, that are linked to anything created. You say, well, that sounds kind of extreme, Pastor. Can you show me that from the Bible? Well, it's here. Any likeness. God will not be represented by anything that is God will not be represented by anything perceptible to our senses. And so, our larger catechism. And some of you have taken an oath to teach this to your children when you presented them for baptism. What are the sins forbidden in the second commandment? And one of them is the making any representation of God or of all or any of the three persons, either inwardly in our mind or outwardly in any kind of image or likeness of any creature whatsoever. That's one part of the sins forbidden in this commandment, and there are others as well. So this is explicit. There is no doubt about it. God, in this commandment, forbids any representation of Himself, whatever. God gave this commandment to His ancient people and they could not get it through their heads. None of the nations could ever get it through their heads. And so the Israelites copied them and sinned against God. Stubborn, hard, and today the church continues in the same sins 3,000 years later. What does it mean to be a sinner? Just to live and to do the things that come naturally. And to decorate our lives with religion and to refuse to do the things that God has commanded. I want there to be no doubt in anyone's mind this morning when you leave this place about what is required in this commandment. It forbids very clearly any
likeness whatever.
Now the second prohibition in this commandment is implicit. And some of you may have already guessed what it is. I would be tempted to ask, how many could guess what the second prohibition is? The second prohibition is that in this commandment, God forbids all worship invented by men. He forbids all worship invented by men. An image or likeness, the forming of an image or likeness, is the work of our own hands. It is the work of our imagination. It is the way that you and I choose to relate to God. And God says, no. But it is our own work, our own device. We say, I am not going to worship an infinite spirit that I can't comprehend. That makes no sense at all. I've got to think of him in terms of things that I can relate to. And so I choose or invent things that help me. See, the Israelites never intended to worship other gods. They wanted help to worship Jehovah. And that was the evil, the great evil. Just like so many people today go into church, they want help. People come, hundreds of people come into this service and they leave and they never come back because they don't have the help. Where's the organ that I'm used to? Where's the sweet sound? The choirs, the things that make me feel religious and warm and fleshy and to have all of these devotional feelings. I don't feel anything there. Wonder what they would have done in worshiping with the apostles from house to house, or the Christians in Rome who worshiped in caves and houses. What did they have? The reading of the scriptures, the singing of the psalms, the prayers, the preaching of the word, the sacraments. They were satisfied. This principle implicit in this commandment, you see, it goes deeper than just the likeness of God. It forbids the worship of God in any way of our own devising. Because God says in this commandment, you are not capable of deciding how I'm to be worshipped. I alone make that decision. I know best. Since I'm the object of worship, and you don't understand me, I know best how I am to be worshipped. Don't you bring into worship things that you think will help you to relate to me. And so it forbids bringing anything into the worship that we invent or devise ourselves. And John Calvin, in the days of the Reformation, saw this principle that has influenced all of those that have stood in this tradition ever since. A lot of people think about Reformed faith and they think of predestination. That's our heritage. It's only a little part of it. In fact, the principal part of the Reformed tradition is this doctrine of worship. That Everything is eliminated from God's worship except what He has commanded. And some people say, well, I won't go into that. That's another subject. In the Protestant Reformation, if you'd gone to a Lutheran church in Germany and you'd gone to Calvin's church in Geneva, you would have found two very different services. Or if you'd gone to an Anglican church in England, all Protestants, but the Anglican and the Lutheran service would be very different from the service that you'd find where Mr. Calvin was preaching in Geneva. How would it be different? Because in comparison, the worship in Geneva would look sterile. And why? Because of this principle that I'm talking about right now. That's why evangelical worship today has become more Catholic. It's because they don't follow this principle. Instead of having the beautiful liturgies of the Lutheran Church, they have the fundamentalist bands. But it's just because it's a lower culture, the subculture. Evangelical fundamentalism is a subculture. And the images they choose are not as lofty as the Roman Catholic and Lutheran and Anglican images, because they are fundamentalists at heart. But it's all the same thing. It is bringing into God's worship the works of our own hands, our inventions. Isn't it wonderful that God in the days of the Reformation spared this great man, Calvin, and enabled him to see this principle in this commandment? And it's right, not because it comes from Calvin, but because it is right and we all connect with it, don't we? God is saying in this commandment, in effect, implicitly, I will determine how I am to be worshipped. And he says that. Now, Calvin saw this not just from this commandment alone, but he saw this principle echoed in other passages. For example, in Deuteronomy 4, verse 2. Here God repeats the law, and here's the commandment concerning worship. Ye shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall ye diminish aught from it, that ye may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. Now there is something that is called the regulative principle of worship. It means that God regulates His worship, that He establishes how He is to worship. He gives commandment. And we may not only may we not take away from it, but we may not add to it. That means our own invention. Another passage is in chapter 12 in Deuteronomy, verse 32. You might take these down because they're good passages to correlate to the fourth commandment. In connection with images, by the way, the use of images and likenesses in the worship, the people are warned before they go into the promised land in Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. What things soever I command you, observe to do it, thou shalt not add thereto, nor diminish from it. Now I want you to think. Now some of you this morning are, there's one family here that has a Lutheran background. Now God speaks here about the thing that I command you to do. Everybody knows where to do those things, right? Preaching, prayer, Reading of Scripture. But you know, some churches don't even have any reading of Scripture as an element of worship anymore. The things that God has commanded. Now, that circle in Lutheran and Anglican worship and Roman Catholic worship is bigger. Because it's not only the things that God commanded, but also we may add to it the things that He's... other things as long as God has not forbidden them. And so the Lutherans and Anglicans, they saw things in the Roman Catholic worship of their day that God had forbidden. So they eliminated all of those excesses, but they left things that God had not forbidden. You see what I'm saying? I could do this better if I could make a little circle and then a bigger circle. And the in-between, the little circle and the big circle, are the things that God has not commanded, but He's not forbidden them either. Keyboards, soloists, etc., 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 in our own PCA church today. Drama, plays, all these things. Now, in the Reformation in Geneva, Calvin said, everything outside this little circle is forbidden, based on what we, on the second commandment, and based on what we read. Thou shalt not add to that little circle or take away from it. Therefore, all that God has not commanded is automatically forbidden. That is the regulative principle of worship. And you know that every body, thousands of people in the PCA, because it's in our confession, and I'll show it to you in a moment, they all say, oh yes, I believe in that. But they don't do it. It's just like the Jews before they were destroyed. They say, oh, we believe the Torah. All that God has said, we believe. But they didn't really. First Kings chapter 12, verse 32, verse 33. This is the worship that Jeroboam, the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, instituted. So he offered upon the altar which he had made in Bethel the 15th day of the 8th month, even in the month which he had devised of his own heart and ordained a feast unto the children of Israel. Now you see the negative way that that's cast? Can you sense that in the passage? Even in the month which he devised of his own heart. In other words, he set up a worship and observance, something that he had devised. In other words, it's presented to us as something that's sinful because he had devised it. Of his own heart. Now, where does this principle come from? That anything that we devise, we may not enter into God's worship. It comes right out of the second commandment. And if we're thinking correctly as Christians, the Ten Commandments encompass the whole duty of man. Jesus teaches this in the New Testament. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house. So Bill Gates can look at that and say, well, I don't covet. I don't covet my neighbor's house. But he fails to understand that any discontentment is a violation of the Tenth Commandment. You see what we're trying to say? It encompasses the whole moral duty of man. It is a summary of the whole moral duty that we owe to God. And when we begin to think of that breadth, then we can see that the second commandment deals with all the worship of God. It not only forbids the making of any representation of God, but it forbids the introduction into God's worship of anything of our own devising. And since, and you know, we can only offer in faith to God in worship what He has commanded. We can offer in faith the reading of the Old Testament, the prayers and the preaching of the Word. We can offer those things in faith because God has commanded them. Anything of our own devising, we cannot offer in faith because God hasn't commanded it. How can you offer something to God that He hasn't commanded in faith? You can't. You can only do it in your own self-will. And anything that you devise and inject